Dr. Michael Roizen.
Dr. Michael Roizen.
You, the Owner's Manual Radio Show.
This is You, the Owner's Manual Radio Show, and this is 969B. The B's are always the guest segment, and we have an unusual and wonderful guest for you. It's not that we don't have wonderful guests for you all the time, but this is unusual because we normally talk almost exclusively about human disease. Rarely do we have someone talking about pets, and we clearly don't have anyone talking about pets as doctors. But that's what this is, Dr. Dog, if you will. D-O-C-T-O-R-D-O-G-S is the name of the book. Maria Goodavage, G-O-O-D-A-V-A-G-E, is the author, the New York Times bestselling author of Dr. Dogs. And I should tell you, this is 969B. We're sponsored, if you will, by Persona Nutrition. You can discover vitamins and supplements personalized for your needs. Take the free online assessment at mypersona.com, mypersona.com. So Persona Nutrition is our relatively new sponsor. Maria, thanks very much for coming on. And how did you get interested in the idea of doctors as dogs? Dogs as doctors, I should say.
Yeah, dogs as doctors. Well, I've been writing, I've been writing books about military and Secret Service dogs for a number of years, and those dogs are amazing. They use their nose and their bond with their handlers to stop the bad guys, to sniff out bombs, and to literally stop bad things from happening to the people they're guarding. And so the dogs I'm writing about now are just sort of the next step for me. They are using their noses and their bonds to stop disease, at least to alert their people to disease, to sniff out cancer and things like that in research settings. So I've been writing about this, and it was a natural step. When I first learned that dogs were sniffing out cancer in laboratory settings, I was fascinated because we have a hard-to-detect cancer in our family. We have ovarian cancer that seems to run in the family. My mom died from it, and I read that dogs in the University of Pennsylvania Working Dog Center were being trained on ovarian cancer. And they're really good at it, and they can catch it in the early stages. So I have skin in that game, and I decided to research this as my next possible book for many reasons. But it was just a natural follow-up to what I was doing before.
Well, that's fascinating. So what I had heard, what happened at the respiratory unit at the Cleveland Clinic, it was, in fact, the human who had, and it was initially done in animals, when they had lung cancer, there was a volatile compound or a smelly compound, that is a compound with a different smell than normal, that was released from the cancer. Not that the cancer had died, but that was released from the cancer as a organic compound that the dog could detect. As I understood the last time I was looking at this, is there were people trying to identify what compound that was. But right now, what you've done is moved way beyond that to look at a variety of cancers. And they don't all put right out the same chemical, do they?
Well, nobody yet knows just what these cancers, what VOCs, volatile organic compounds, these cancers are emitting. They're working, scientists who work with GCMS, that's chemical analysis technique, gas chromatography, magnetic spectrometry, are working really hand-in-hand with the dogs. The dogs will alert to the cancer, let's say the urine of the woman with ovarian cancer, or let's say blood. In Pennsylvania, they're using the blood samples. So they'll alert to her plasma, and then the scientists will say, oh, what compounds are there from this plasma that the dog could be smelling? And so they will break it down and give it back to the dog. Is it this? And the dog won't alert, so it's not that. And it may be it may not just be the compounds themselves, but it might be the patterns of the compounds. And we don't know yet. Nobody knows. And scientists around the world are working to find out what it is dogs are sniffing. Is there one big overall fingerprint for all cancers? Does each cancer have its own unique fingerprint and there's an overall one? These are really basic questions that will hopefully be answered thanks to the dogs and the scientists who are working with them. And let me just get something clear, because when I say research dogs, people understandably picture beagles locked away in cages. But these are generally pet dogs who are highly trained. They come in for their day of work. They get love and treats and praise and all kinds of goodies, and they go home at the end of the day, and they work, you know, 2 or 3 days a week, and they love what they do. So that's, just want to get that out of the way, because research dogs don't always give the best feeling to people. But these are really great dogs who love what they do, and they have to want to be rewarded. They have to really work for their treat. That's what they're working for. And dogs who don't care that much about the food, they aren't going to be so good, but almost any breed has been used, and lots of breeds are used in this work. And it's not only cancer, but many kinds of cancer are being explored this way, but also Parkinson's and malaria. What they're hoping one day is that the dogs will lead to technology that will be easy. So, say, for ovarian cancer, I'll be able to go and breathe into a tube, into this e-nose, as it were, and it'll say, yeah, you're good for another year, and non-invasive, cheap, and all based on the dog's nose. And I just love that dogs are probably going to be part of the reason we're going to have this really good technology in the future. I hope it comes soon. No one's really putting a time frame on it, but one scientist thinks maybe within 5 years we'll have some preliminaries. I'm hopeful.
More of You, the Owner's Manual, coming right up. But let's take a moment to talk about your health. Dr. Roizen will tell you that a common question he gets asked often is what vitamins he likes, what he recommends. Without knowing more about their needs, that question used to be almost impossible to answer. Now, however, it's easy. Go to personanutrition.com/Roizen and take your free assessment. It's a smart and easy way to get personalized supplement recommendations. The Persona Assessment is backed by the latest nutritional research and the expertise of Persona's Medical Advisory Board, which consists of 8 nutritionists, a pharmacist, and 5 medical doctors, including Dr. Michael Roizen. All the latest scientific data and nutritional research put into one supplement program personalized for you. Just take the 5-minute assessment to get your free recommendations based on your goals, lifestyle, allergies, special diets, and prescription meds. Convenient vitamin packs are delivered to your door each month. Whether you want to sleep better, have more energy, or simply stay as young as you can, go to personanutrition.com/Roizen and get 50% off your order today. Half off now at personanutrition.com/Roizen. That's R-O-I-Z-E-N.
Now, when you went around the world to look at this, is there, and you mentioned the University of Pennsylvania, and I know some of the studies, the initial study on lung cancer, were done here at the Cleveland Clinic, but there, you went around the world to look at this, and part of the book, or part of the adventure in the book Dr. Dogs is, in fact, a trip, kind of what I would call around the world. So where did you see this? In other words, the ovarian cancer, where was that? Where were the, are the different cancers in different areas? Are these labs working together? How do they, is there a society of doctor dogs, or are you arranging one?
I would read studies, or sometimes there would be a newspaper article about something going on. So, those dogs, the ovarian cancer dogs, are in at the University of Pennsylvania Working Dog Center. They do amazing work with working dogs and their sense of smell anyway, and they're actually detecting this at stage one sometimes. So that's really, really hopeful. And then I went to Japan. I spent quite a bit of time in Japan. They have a very high rate of stomach cancer in this bucolic, beautiful region north, way north of Tokyo. And you would never, it's all cedars and rice fields and natural beauty, but the stomach cancer rate there is the highest in the whole country. And they're not really so much trying to find out why. Dogs can't tell them why, but they're trying to find a rapid screening technique. Because the current techniques for stomach cancer are pretty invasive and expensive. So if a dog can just sniff the urine and say, you might have something here. That would be so much easier. So they set up a screening study, and that means that the dogs who are normally rewarded when they hit on the right thing, you know, when the people know what's going on, the dog gets a reward, but nobody knows if these people have cancer or not. And so it was a little harder. It was much more challenging to get the dogs to stay on task and to get them to, you know, they're not being rewarded necessarily because they don't know, the people don't know if they have cancer. So that proved a little challenging. They did get some really good data, and they're using this now, what they're learning with that, with the GCMS technology, and they're trying to develop some of the, what we were talking about earlier, the technology that will help detect it earlier. In England, they're doing prostate cancer, and I think they've done thyroid cancer, I believe breast cancer as well is going on there. And in the Netherlands, it was colorectal cancer, and as breast cancer, now they have a really exciting new study on breast cancer. There's something now going on, and I wish I'd known about it, but it just started after I was done with the book, in Australia. And more scientists are beginning to realize that this is something big, and this is something that is just beginning. It's the tip of the iceberg, and yet it could lead to something fairly quickly, and the more data, the better. People seem very happy to share their data and to share their techniques because, you know, if you don't do it just right, you could have something like the clever Hans effect affecting the dog. That's when you're in the same room and the dog is reading you, and even if you don't know where the sample is among six or eight samples that the dog is sniffing, even an inadvertent body language might be picked up by the dog because you know how much dogs watch people. So they have to be very careful, and best practices, they're learning more and more all the time. Even, you know, we all, as you know, we shed skin cells all the time. I'm sitting here, you know, shedding tens of thousands of skin cells during this interview. They found that sometimes a dog can pick up on the person who prepared the sample, and they might be alerting to the person who prepared the sample instead of the cancer. So they have to really, there's more, it's more and more sophisticated all the time. So it's getting really pure and really good. And again, the doctor dogs are not going to be in your doctor's back office or, you know, at your local laboratory sniffing out cancer. The end goal is for them to be our best friends and help us get to this technology, which can be used around the world. And I just think that's such a beautiful role for them.
We're talking with Maria Goodavaj, and forgive me for mispronouncing your name. It's Goodavage. She's the author of Doctor Dogs, How Our Best Friends Are Becoming Our Best Medicine. It's a book published by Dutton, and as you can tell from her passion and the excitement in talking to us about it, it's a wonderful book. We're going to continue with a little more, but a quick reminder that Persona Nutrition is our sponsor. You can use Persona just like I do. We're going to make it easy for you, and you just go to mypersona.com, and you can take a free test to find out what you should be doing or what you can be doing to optimize your rate of aging. Let's go back to Maria Goodavaj and Dr. Dogs. So this is going on, and what you really are describing is a lot of the difficulty in getting the technique down. One of the interesting things that I've been learning is that we're seeing a increase in aromatherapy as effective in treating pain and even nausea of pregnancy, or the if you will, the period of time, and even some nausea I would call it dysphoria with cancer, cancer treatments. And so aromatherapy is pretty, is getting much more of a scientific basis, I would say. Does the dog, and I don't know this, so I'm asking you, and I didn't see it in reading the book, and it may have been in there, but I didn't read the whole book yet. Does the dog have the same olfactory type of system we do, where the olfactory nerve bypasses the spinal cord and goes right to the brain?
I believe that that happens with the dogs as well. However, they are way more set up for a beautiful olfactory world. Like, they have such astonishingly sensitive noses. So they can sniff in parts per trillion, which is, if you kind of want to picture that, you picture a tablespoon of something in two big, huge Olympic swimming pools. And they can detect something so minute. We actually have a much better ability to smell than a lot of us give ourselves credit for. We have about 6 million olfactory receptors, but dogs have up to 300 million. Their brains are really well equipped to make sense of these scents, so to speak. And I like to say their olfactory world is rich and vivid. It's kind of like our visual world. And that's how I like to picture it when my dog is sniffing at something interminably that I can't see, I can't smell. It means nothing to me, but to him, it's so vivid. And someone at the University of Pennsylvania who studies this day in, day out says dogs smell in color. Of course, they don't really smell in color, but she was just trying to describe how big and beautiful and vivid this world is to them. And I've seen dogs sniff out, for my other books, narcotics and explosives materials that are hidden in plastic bags, in a can, with a suitcase around it, and it's super easy for them to find this kind of stuff. So finding disease once they're trained on that scent is really easy for them, actually. They just have to know what they're sniffing for.
We're talking with Maria Goodevich, the author of Dr. Dogs. So one of the things that dogs do is you see them often in airports at TSA, and I assume they're smelling for either narcotics or for explosives. How good are they at doing that? In other words, are they? You're telling me, in fact, they have 50 times the olfactory receptors we do, which obviously probably makes them at least 10 times, if not 50 times or more sensitive than we are. Are they really good? So you explored this in a prior book as well as in this. You alluded to it here. Are they really good at this? What do their trainers or their masters say about that?
They're really, 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 really good at it, and I have not done the airport dogs, but it's the same technique. Let's say they're going for the guys that I write about usually, or the guys and women are going to war, or they're doing presidential protection work, and so what they're the ones especially who go and walk in these bomb-laden fields. These IEDs are everywhere in Afghanistan or in the past Iraq. Their dogs are just able to just get a little whiff of something, and it can be any number of different explosives. They've been trained on the odors of these explosives. They are trained one at a time, but then they pick it up. They know this means reward, and I want to smell this. And that's what they do, and it's the same with narcotics. And it's easy for them. It's just, if with the right training, if the dog has good focus, it is just something that they can pick up on quite well. Not every dog can, obviously, and some don't have the attention span, and some are too hyper. But the dogs love to work, and they love to use their noses, and this is just one way to do it. I mean, it's even the beagle smelling cheese in the background when you come in from another country. That's a great job, too. But the dogs are really good at this, just as it transfers to, what they're doing with our bodies. Except there's a lot more going on in our bodies. But when they're out at war and the handlers are depending on the dogs to get them and a whole bunch of troops and maybe even people who live there through an area, and it's all dependent on the dog's nose, and there's no machinery that can compare. There's no device that is comparable yet to a dog's nose. They're working on it all the time, but hey, nothing is going to be as cute and cuddly as a dog, because those dogs serve the other purpose of keeping morale up in these rough times as well.
We're talking with Maria Goodevich, author of Dr. Dogs. What a great title. How Our Best Friends Are Becoming Our Best Medicine. Please do consider it. It's a wonderful book. It's a fun book, as well as has a lot of science in it, and will help you understand why dogs are so important in advancing science. Maria, thanks very much for coming on. And Justin and Randall, thank you for engineering, but especially thank our listeners. It's you who we work for and do this for, because hopefully the 50,000 or so who download us every week tell your friends about us, but who enjoy us, and that's why we do this. This has been 969B, and remember, we are sponsored by Persona Nutrition. You can go to mypersona.com and take the free nutrition test to find out if anything, if any supplements or vitamins will help you. I use them too. Thanks again, Maria, and thank you for downloading us.